The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas. So happy to be here with you today. And wow, what a loaded show. We say that every day, right? But it follows what's going on in the news, headline news, news of the moment, hot button issues, and how we have level and calm heads about all of these issues and speak about them with clarity. But first, we have to be well informed and engaged to be able to do that. We have to bring calm voices to the debate. And if people don't want to debate it, well, we have to be able to at least say and speak truth. And truth does convict, if you will, the human heart about what people might not have heard before or thought of in this way. What the church teaches about the human person, human flourishing, human integration, the fully integrated person, that's very important for people to hear. They don't think about that because they aren't hearing it anywhere else. But you're going to hear it here on Drew Mariani's show, on Relevant Radio, all across the programming day and always. So you know that's why you tune in here. I'm happy to be here again. Sheila Logminas, in for Drew. Well, let's get to it. Speaking of hot button issues, things you care about, we all care about tech, high tech, big tech. You're seeing that a lot in the news. Lots of news going on in the Washington Post with a series they've been doing on the Pegasus project. And that's another story for another time, but it all gets into big tech, how it's being used, who are the actors behind that, what can be done. What about all those apps on your devices? Do you even know what is happening when you put those apps on your devices? And don't you find it suspicious sometimes what shows up in your searches online after you've just done something with an app and all of a sudden, wait a minute, that relates to something I wasn't even searching for. So yeah, that goes on. But that's why we have to take such care in how we do what we do and use what we use and how we communicate. And remember, I always say this, but it's just a repetition of what the church teaches. John Paul II said it. Communication is a moral act. Well, we're using our communication ability here well. And I want to get into it right away with a great guest right off the bat. Exposés of people's private lives and sins. See, that's part of what we're talking about, right? Can seem like stuff of gossip tabloids, and it used to be more that way, gossip tabloids. But what happens when that person's actually a priest who has a very high standing? Yesterday, The Pillar, which is a Catholic investigative journalism site run by a couple of canon lawyers, ran a story that exposed what appears to be the double life of Monsignor Jeffrey Burrill. Monsignor Burrill is no ordinary priest. He was, up until yesterday, the general secretary for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Before that, he had been an associate director of the conference, that USCCB conference. And before that, this priest from the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin, had been a professor and formator at the North American College in Rome, one of the national seminaries in Rome. What the guys at The Pillar did was to somehow obtain data from an app called Grindr. This app is designed for homosexual hookups and allows the user to know when other app users are in the vicinity. It's a location-based app, therefore, so it keeps tabs on where you are. The reporters got this data and found that Monsignor Burrill's phone emitted app data signals from Grindr on a near-daily basis during parts of 2018, 2019, and 2020 at both his USCCB office and his USCCB-owned residence, as well as during USCCB meetings and events in other cities. It was also used, according to The Pillar, on numerous occasions at his family lake house, near the residences of his family members, and at a Wisconsin apartment in his hometown, at which he himself has been listed as a resident. Monsignor Burrill suddenly resigned his post yesterday. The Diocese of La Crosse issued a statement saying that, in conjunction with the diocese's Protect and Heal initiatives, Monsignor Burrill has consistently completed safe environment training and background checks. His most recent background check was completed in 2020. But a lot of questions are being raised about the approach The Pillar took. An opinion column at Religion News Service called it, quote, unethical, homophobic innuendo, close quote. The Jesuit priest Father James Martin wondered about how far this goes. He asks this on Twitter, why not spy on lay teachers at Catholic schools? Why not spy on all parishioners? Father Robert Gall is here. He's an associate professor of ethics at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. Perfect person to have this conversation with. Father Gall, it's great to talk with you again.
Thank you, Sheila. It's great to be on the show with you. And what a challenging topic we have today. But thank you for leading into it with those profound words from St. John Paul II, that communication is a moral act. This from John Paul II, this is a very powerful statement, because for John Paul II, a moral act is a manifestation of our self-determination, our freedom, that which is the very core of our human dignity. And so really what this entire topic is relevant to all of us regarding our struggle to have a clean heart so we might see God.
And also, Father Gall, to sort of expand on that, because I know, you know, you would do that if I just said, take the floor, Father, and just talk for an hour. You would. And therefore, expanding on that, how we use our social media, speaking of apps and technology and so forth, how we use our social media matters a great deal too. Because people witness, they see what we write, and those are words, and words mean things, and they have power, and they create thoughts in the mind, and thoughts in the mind lead to action, person and act. That's another John Paul. In fact, that was his thesis, I think. Document and writing and great teaching, person and act. So, Father, putting all this together about this story about Monsignor Baril, we have to be very careful not to leap to conclusions or judge. And I know a lot of people are thinking, what do you mean judge? Look what that says. Look what that shows. How can you not draw a conclusion? What say you, Father Gall?
Well, exactly what you said regarding our use of social media. And it can even be looking at one's screen. That in itself mm-hmm. is a moral act. And sometimes it can be, certainly when young people see their parents looking at their screen, for instance, at the dinner table, perhaps when the parents themselves have told their children not to look at their screen at the dinner table, we're constantly setting an example. And there's even this phenomenon of doom scrolling that some people call it. And I think it's especially linked to use of some of these streaming kind of social media like Twitter, where people could they just keep getting information, and it's changing our brains. And we should be aware of that whenever you don't even have to look at your screen. Actually, simply the act of putting your phone in your pocket and knowing that it might ring, and you may be looking forward to its buzz, because that means a message is coming in and you get some endorphins and perhaps even some oxytocin that your brain secretes. So that in itself is moral formation or deformation.
Oh, yeah, good point. Good point. Because that's what people do. So, but they don't think about it in terms of endorphins. You know, something happens in your brain when that device in your pocket suddenly buzzes and you think, oh, I have a message. You want to check it, and it might be something you're anticipating. It might not, but you're eager to look at it and see, Father Gall, what it is. And if it's something you might respond to right away, you're right. We're kind of always on, right? I said on the show, I think yesterday, we're in an age now where no one ever has to have an unuttered thought. And that's not good. So these devices, it's good that you bring the ethical, moral dimension to our use of all devices. And we're talking, I know, specifically right now about things like apps on iPhones or iPads that we interact with most often. But bringing that moral dimension to it, Father Gall, as you do, ethical and moral, is so important, and especially in relationship to this story we're talking about. But we have to remember, Father Gall, let's talk about this for a moment, that those devices, all of them, all our apps that we get on there are somehow related to the content provider, right? So when you do that, you're agreeing, are you not, to use that app, and therefore they've got some data from you.
Right, exactly. So for some people, this is a shock and a surprise that this kind of data is available. But in fact, it's been going on now for several years, and it's been expanding very rapidly. There's even websites where you can gain some really interesting data about people's movements, like mm-hmm. traffic patterns, that can be really interesting, like how many people even like slow down in front of a sign or something like that. You can even get that. Yeah, or even, you know, like how might movements change around lunchtime in a particular area of the city. You can purchase this data that is anonymized, meaning that they've taken the user's name off, and yet there's a code that's associated to your device that is present. So that, and this is in this present case regarding the Pillar investigation, that if you're able to associate that code, to some physical reference point that helps you to discover who that person is, who the user is, then it's no longer anonymized. And yet it's been, when you've accepted to install that app, you've probably have 500 pages of legal documents that you've skimmed through. You've just put a check mark there because nobody has the time actually to read these legal details. And if you did, you might not understand it unless you were an expert in the field. And they're purposely drafted that way. And yet you have signed over all that data so that by accepting to use that app, you are in fact a product. You have become the product that they are selling. So this should, it's certainly a warning to all of us to be careful about what we're using on our devices. It's also a warning that, let's say, here we're dealing with, of course, a Catholic priest, we're dealing with the church and with his authority, but what if instead the authority is the government? And do we want the government to be able to exercise this kind of surveillance upon us? It's certainly not planned out by our Constitution. For the government to be able to surveil constantly even people without cause who have no accusation against them regarding their movements and their presence, their physical presence at any point in time.
You know, Father, that's something that's turning up in a lot of news stories right now. Some of them are a little bit unrelated, but they overlap in that they're about surveillance, about surreptitious surveillance. People don't know about them. And it was interesting that when the Washington Post, this is a quick aside, Washington Post first came out with that Pegasus Project investigation results, it quickly, within hours of the same day, the Washington Post came out with the first of that. The New York Times jumped in and issued its own news story about the Pegasus Project, but then they said, what the Washington Post didn't tell you readers, in so many words, the New York Times said that, is that within that surveillance or undercover, you know, people hacking into accounts and so forth of government members, was that there was a link to, let's just say, someone in the administration at some level with money changing hands for something. I'm not going to get into that. But it was interesting. Father, this has been in the news a lot. And so too are other stories about foreign government actors, or at least with the knowledge of a foreign government actors, you know, doing some of the hacking or following. So this is all over the news these days. And here we are now with this story of a Catholic priest, and then others like Father James Martin, I said in the setup, take to social media as Father James Martin did, and then make a statement about this story, and then the Pillar story article about a priest, and then Religion News Service calls it unethical, homophobic innuendo, and then that just starts to lead to all kinds of people weighing in a debate. So far, the debate I've seen in this long thread after Father Martin's post, so far it's been, you know, above the level of a lot of, you know, interactions. But so let's go with this question for now. I don't want to distract from this issue, but what are the ethics of these companies, Father Gall, to put it to that point? The ethics of these companies collecting all this data and selling it to the highest bidder, because that even involves, you know, tracking people who use this app at hand in this story.
So what's really crucial is that concept, I think, of anonymization. It's also crucial whether or not they're using the data to serve the user, to help the user. So we've probably all experienced, or many of us have experienced this with Amazon, which has a very strong monopoly and covers much of our purchases. We've experienced this in the sense that Amazon makes recommendations to us to purchase products. We probably all had the experience, could be a book, could be shoes, that Amazon recommends like exactly what you might have been looking for if you'd been looking for it. And that's something I would be interested in. And it's because they know us and they have all this data on us. But in that case, they're using it maybe to help us. They're also, of course, using it to make more money and to sell more products. But sometimes you can find that really useful. Like, it'll recommend a book that we're really interested in. It could be a spiritual book, theology book, because we've chosen other spiritual books and theology books by similar authors. And it's extremely powerful information. It can be a great benefit for us. But on the other hand, if they're selling it in such a way that the one who purchases it can somehow track who the identity is of that data point, and then they can do something against you to manipulate you. We can think here of the capabilities for extortion, bribery, blackmail that should really cause fear with respect to any organization, any institution, like the Catholic Church, like the Conference Bishops, that has authorities who are in position, public authorities, that could be susceptible to some kind of blackmail, given the data that's out there that they may not even be aware of. So clearly, blackmail is unethical, but serving people to help them to have information, it could be, hey, there's a pizza restaurant around the corner, just at the moment when you're looking for pizza in Google Maps. that would be serving your interests. But instead, if it's planning some scheme to take advantage of you, then that can be really dangerous morally. It's immoral to abuse people in order to take advantage of them.
Well, and that leads into what I was going to ask you to since you're an expert in ethics and morals and applying that to everything. You and I talked on a visit to Rome once about when we talked about what I cover on shows, and I brought up, oh, things like this and this and that, and even father business and economics and, you know, what are ethical economics? What are moral markets? I had a guest come on and say, markets are neutral. They're not human beings. They're not moral or immoral. And you said, oh, no, that's not true. And so you have the ability to speak to each of these issues, and that's very good. That's why I wanted to come to you today, because when you just said about how our data are used by these big companies who run these platforms, we really need to delve into that a little bit more, because in some cases, as in the one we're talking about, Father Gall, they're being used to expose someone else's sins. That's a big element here. And we know that goes on in the gossip world and celebrities and all that in social media. But now we're talking about an app that tracks usage and a Catholic priest. And it's just out there. And now social media is being used for people to weigh good people with the right intentions to, you know, but some are taking one stance and others are taking another stance to hold off and wait and the others to excoriate. And so what do you say about that? Using should the public be using the data that's available to them, and because it's available to the public? And what about using it to expose someone else's sins?
Right, these are really interesting points that have to do with, Sheila, just exactly as you mentioned, my interest in church management, because I'm leading the program of church management at my university, and we're promoting the principles of transparency and accountability, and of course, the involvement of professional lay men and women in church organizations, including in the running of church organizations. And we've really been supported by the Holy See, and even personally by Pope Francis. And Pope Francis has very recently, and we celebrate this, he has enshrined in law, as a principle of law, transparency and accountability. So it's interesting to ask, well, where does defamation, which is propagating negative information about someone, where does that meet the need for transparency? When is it appropriate morally to propagate such negative information? So clearly, let's say that you're working in a church institution and you just come to the suspicion that someone may be stealing money from the church, which of course belongs to all of the faithful that are participating in the church. Well, of course, you should report that and you should pursue it. And if somebody seems to be hiding it, then you should pursue and report even more vigorously. And if the authority in the institution doesn't pursue it, there may be good reason to bring it to the press, to the media, so as to expose, to uncover, and then to heal and repair that moral damage. Now, there's something, of course, similar in a case like the one that we're dealing with. And in specifically what the Pillar did once they got this information, there are specific issues here. We don't have all the details. I don't think it's public knowledge yet regarding why and how actually they pursued acquiring the information. But once they had this negative information about Monsignor Burrell, they went to the U.S. Bishops Conference with it, and they asked for a meeting. And that's an interesting step. I mean, if they had immediately gone to publication, I think that would have definitely been wrong. But instead, they went to the authorities so that they could give a response and so that they themselves could do an investigation and figure out what would be the next step. So at this point, what we know in this case is that Pillar did this investigation. They asked for this meeting. They've reported some facts that show negative light on this individual, and he has resigned after a bit of a response from the bishops, but not any details. So they've accepted his resignation. So at this point, it seems like someone it looks on the surface, but we don't have very much information. And of course, we should, as Christians, we ought not to judge anyone. We ought not to judge their soul. And we should hope for the best, and we should pray for Monsignor Burrell. and hope that this is an opportunity. Perhaps he's suffering very much, and that this is all based on a mistake, and that we should hope for. Nonetheless, at the minimum, it seems that he was potentially exposed to being a victim of some kind of blackmail, and that the Bishops' Conference is making sure that not take place. So we should be watching, though, carefully what the next steps are going to be in response of the Bishops' Conference while praying for the Monsignor in question. So what this comes down to is we ought not to reveal negative information about anyone for no good reason or simply because it's gossip. But if there's a good reason, for instance, that person is in a position of authority, that information would indicate that there's a danger of abuse of authority and of power, then that may be a very good reason to reveal that information, especially to that person's authority. This is exactly why in Vos Estis Lux Mundi, you are the light of the world, the Pope Francis has given an obligation on many people in the church to denounce those who seem to be doing something against the law of the church.
Well, that's a good reminder, Father, because a lot of people don't read these documents and don't really know what the Pope is saying. I really like George Weigel's latest column about, you know, for all the people who don't think Pope Francis has said much about abortion, George revealed not all of what Pope Francis has said, but certainly a fair amount of it. And he's certainly confirmed the fact that, yes, he indeed has. He's spoken out strongly. I actually, you're likening abortion to hiring a hitman. But that's kind of the kind of clarification and edification people need. What you just said about something Pope Francis has written about this, it's really important that people know this. And before we run out of time for this bottom of the hour anyway, because you're staying on with me, Father Gall will be here. We will take your calls, 888-914-9149. I'll take Donna next, coming up shortly. But I want to say this to follow up on what you said, Father Gall, that when Monsignor Baril resigned yesterday as General Secretary of the conference, USCCB, that Archbishop Jose Gomez, President of the USCCB, wrote just yesterday in a memo to U.S. bishops, this is a quote, "On Monday, we became aware of impending media reports alleging possible improper behavior by Monsignor Baril. What was shared with us did not include allegations of misconduct with minors. However, in order to avoid becoming a distraction to the operations and ongoing work of the conference, Monsignor has resigned effective immediately." So this has to be handled with care, however, not, you know, ignored. And that's why you're here, Father Gall. So, again, I'm so happy you're here because you do deal with ethics, morals, communication. I love that you, the Santa Croce, the Church of the Holy Cross, Pontifical Santa Croce in Rome, has that program, the Church and Communications. I love that program, and so good to have you here to talk about this. We're going to be talking about this ongoing topic of use of your data next.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
To the Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew. Just want to let you know, Drew will be back at the end of the week. He's just taking a little time off. We all need that, right? Drew works so hard and doesn't take a lot of time off. Sometimes he's off for a few days for work, to go somewhere else. It might be a pilgrimage, whatever. But he's taking a little needed time off. We all need that again. And I'm really happy. Sheila Logminas in for Drew and another day. But wow, I love having the great guests in here. And Drew and I have talked a lot about the shows this week, and he's just fully confident that his team and I are going to put together the shows that he would if he were here, and he will again at the end of this week. So he'll be back. I'm talking with Father Robert Gall, an associate professor of ethics at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross, Santa Croce in Rome. We're talking about what you may have heard about, The Pillar, a Catholic investigative journalism site run by a couple of canon lawyers, ran a story that exposed what appears to be the double life of Monsignor Jeffrey Baril. Monsignor Baril, no ordinary priest, up until yesterday, the General Secretary for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Before that, Associate Director of the USCCB. Before that, this La Crosse diocese priest had been a professor and formator at the North American College in Rome, one of the national seminaries, and so on. Well-known, high-profile, and it was alleged that he had frequent use of this app Grindr. and that it emitted app data signals from, and it was tracked. And all of that was exposed in the article, which led to his resignation. But again, this is not saying he's done what he's done. And Archbishop Gomez issued a statement from the USCCB saying that Monsignor Burrill has resigned. What was shared with us, said Archbishop Gomez, did not include allegations of misconduct with minors. Just at this point, they're just, you know, waiting, playing it safe. And Monsignor Burrill said, you know, it's best to step down. So he did. Father Gall and I are talking about the ethics of these services, using your data, your private data, and making them public. And what happens after that? We all have a right to our reputation. We all have a right to our privacy. And at the same time, these days, who really has much privacy? So Father Gall is an expert on that, the ethics and the morality of that. Communications is a moral act. And we're taking your calls as well, because there's a lot you're worried about, too, probably with your own app use and or about this story. Whichever, it's 888-914-9149. Father, we're going to go to Donna in Jacksonville. She's been holding. Go ahead, Donna. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was thinking about this. I listen to Catholic radio most of the day while I'm working from home, so thank you for all of that you do. And I listen to Patrick Madrid in the morning, and he says that he never takes his iPhone or his cell phone, into his smartphone, into the confessional with him. He leaves it in his car, locked in his car. For the sheer fact that he just wouldn't want something to be picked up. And listening to this story today, but also the comment that, you know, you'll be having a conversation with your friends, and then the next thing you know, that pops up into your search engine or on your Facebook as an ad. I wonder if this practice is something not only parishioners should be doing, but at a bare minimum, that priests should not be taking a smartphone into the confessional. If this is a sacred, confidential place, and that there is plenty of people that don't understand the sacredness of this and would love the opportunity to exploit the confessional, maybe it's a practice we need to implement.
Father Gall, Donna raises a really good point here about, I mean, what Patrick Madrid said, even going into the confessional, having your own device on you, because I made reference to that a little bit ago, but it's really a thing. I've talked to enough people, because I have had it a lot, where just something that was not in an email, Father, or a search I've done online or anything, it was just a conversation I had with somebody. And other, I have friends who've said the exact same thing. Turns up with these ads that suddenly on social media are in your, you know, ad feed on the right side or above the top bar. So Donna raises a really good point. I don't know how that works, but it's something is happening there, that when you just talk, somehow your smartphone seems to pick it up.
I had the most bizarre experience where I usually live in Rome. I'm in Texas right now, but I never in Rome. There's really virtually no garages that I have any contact with or even speak about. Like, I got to the U.S. and I was parking my bicycle. I was biking to work, and I was parking in a garage. I was having troubles with the garage opener. I asked for help from a friend with the garage door opener. And then minutes later, through all of this, my phone was in my pocket. I started getting ads for garage door repair maintenance during the summer. So it's exactly what you're referring to. And then I was making sure to turn off various things possible. Surreptitious gathering of data in my phone. There's various preferences that you can turn off. I know that there are some employers, this is very rare, but there are some employers that purchase cell phones for their employees, and they actually surveil their employees, and they know about this, so that there's actually apps on board that are recording conversations that the employer could potentially use. So I have a friend of a friend who wraps his cell phone in towels and then puts them in a drawer when he's not using, as much as he can, because he doesn't want to be listening this way. And there are people, I know priests who they used to take the battery out of their phone because they knew that even if you power it down, it may still be somehow listening. But the iPhone is allegedly, it has an indicator now with its new iOS that an orange light turns on next to the microphone, that is supposed to tell you when the microphone is active. Hopefully that can be counted upon, but there's certainly some phones and some services that can't be counted upon, and certainly if that is lit up, one should be extremely careful. Of course, mm-hmm. there are also canon law penalties involved for anybody who were to use any information in confession, which is, of course, the most sacred form that there's, of course, the seal of confession that the priest is bound by. But even if someone happens to hear that, they too are bound by it. So and there are prohibitions if someone were to try to record that information. So hopefully nothing so sacred like that is being caught and recorded. And if it were used for some of these ad services, hopefully that's entirely just a machine that's looking at it, no human being. But absolutely reason to be very careful with how we use our devices, and above all, to respect the secrecy of the sacrament of confession.
Especially the sacrament of confession. That's a really good point. I'm glad Donna raised it. A lot of people are thinking right now, probably themselves, oh my gosh, the next time I go into the confessional, what do I do with my phone? I know, Father, I take my purse in. The phone is in the purse. Now I don't know what to do. Maybe leave it in the car before I go into church. That's a good idea. But I'm glad Donna raised that. This sacred seal of a confession, I mean, it doesn't get more sacred than that. Certainly the Eucharist is sacred, but I mean, when we go into the confession, for all of you who think we're confessing to a man, I want to remind you, you're confessing to Christ, because the priest is alter Christus, he's in the place of Christ. And Father, I had in France a French priest. He and I went back and forth. He had very little English, and I had some years in school a long time ago of French. And he said, no, he was very gentle, and it was out in an open field on the feast of the Sacred Heart. He said, no, don't worry. And he pointed up to the sky. He said, you're confessing to him. And I thought, that's a good reminder. So we went through it together in the two languages, and it was a great conversation. But that's goes back to, it's between you through the priest to Christ, and Christ is present in the confessional. But you certainly don't want those smartphones in there. The number is 888-914-9149 for your questions for Father Robert Gall from Santa Croce. Now, right now he's not in Rome, but Santa Croce, Pontifical Santa Croce, is the Holy Cross University in Rome. Excellent university. Father does excellent work there as an associate professor of ethics, and he teaches ethics, morals, communication, bioethics even, Father, I think. I was on one of your the conferences at Santa Croce when you were doing a conference on bioethics. So we're trying to cover it all. So staying with the Monsignor Burrill story for now, because for those who just tuned in, I'm Sheila Logminas, in for Drew. Father Robert Gall is my guest. It's about the Pillar, a Catholic investigative journalism site run by a couple of canon lawyers, running a story that exposed what appeared to be the double life of Monsignor Jeffrey Burrill, a high-profile priest, because the general secretary of the USCCB is what he was serving as until he resigned yesterday. But on that note, Father, we've talked about data being available to the public, but does that mean the public should be using that data, especially when that exposes someone's sins? Let's follow up with this. The church, we kind of touched on this. The church teaches that a person is entitled to his or her good name and reputation. That's important. These days, we got to remind people of that. And that exposing someone's sins to those who don't know, who don't need to know them, is itself the sin of detraction, isn't it, Father?
Yes, indeed. In fact, simply trying to get that information, if there's no reason for the suspicion, if it's not grounded, like going in and trying to pry into people's private life, snooping on them or hiding a camera somewhere, which in a sense is what one is doing when they're purchasing this data, unless they have some prior knowledge that there's some threat of an abuse of their office, which apparently, although it's not clear from the Pillar report on this, it seems that they had other information regarding some other allegations against this Monsignor regarding the use of his office. If that's the case, that you have some reason for suspicion, then there may, and you, especially if you have some role of responsibility and authority, then there may be a justification to try to get that negative information about the individual. But I think it's also really important to take into account that priests are priests 24/7, and priests are priests, all through and through, 100%, all the time. We are consecrated by God to serve the church. So it's not as though any priest should think of themselves as having like time off from being a priest. We certainly do need a kind of break from certain pastoral work. During that break, if we encounter someone who is looking for help and for ministry, for instance, sacrament of confession, of course, the priest should immediately open themselves with a generous heart to do so. But of course, this means also our behavior we should make an effort that everything that we do all the time, even if we're all alone, we're still always in communion with the church through the communion of saints. And this is a real challenge, actually, for all of us, but you know, especially for a priest, to realize I'm always thoroughly a priest, and I want to live in such a way that I don't have anything to hide. Nonetheless, mm-hmm. there is a right to privacy. So we don't. That doesn't mean that people should be snooping around in the private life of someone who is trying to live 24/7 entirely according to the will of God, with obedience and openness to the pastoral life.
That's really good clarification. Father Robert Gall is talking about this case with Monsignor Burrill. If you have any questions about any of this, the data privacy or lack thereof, how your data is used, especially in a public way, ongoing conversations on social media about something that gets posted in a news article and then suddenly it's out there and everybody's weighing in. If you have any questions, 888-914-9149. Father Robert Gall is here to answer them. So, in this case, Monsignor Burrill, two things to point out for those who just tuned in and didn't hear this earlier, but the head of the USCCB said what was shared, Archbishop Jose Gomez, what was shared with us, he said, did not include allegations of misconduct with minors. However, in order to avoid becoming a distraction to the operation ongoing work of the USCCB, Monsignor has resigned effective immediately. That was yesterday. One more thing, Father, to get out there. Monsignor Burrill has consistently completed safe environment training and background checks. His most recent background check was completed in 2020. Now, this Pillar article comes out, and it's tracking pretty heavy usage of an app called Grindr, which we set up front. It's designed for homosexual hookups and allows the user to know when other app users are in the vicinity, location-based, and all that. And it literally exposed Monsignor Burrill's app usage and data signals and all that, from where? And it tracked it all and put it out in an article. So, Father, was this a case of a priest allegedly just falling into temptation? Or do you think, and then we can't maybe know, but your thoughts, or was it something that needed to be made known because of his position?
Yeah, of course, regarding his own, personal, say, inclinations or his own temptation or giving in to something or for some moment, of course, there's no way that we can judge that. But it looks like from this data that was revealed, it looks like that there was, let's say, persistent over time use of apps that seem to have at least been two apps that really there's no reason why any priest, actually, I don't see any reason why anyone who is trying to live according to the gospel should have those apps on their phone. We should even say, I mean, I'm trying not to repeat their names. It'd be better, perhaps, if we didn't even know about these apps. Whenever you pass our mind or imagination, traditionally, the church teaches that we should practice custody of our eyes, custody of our memory, custody of our imagination, and this is a way of practicing the virtue of holy purity and fending off temptations. That custody, so that if something comes to mind which might be immoral, that we try to cast it away, shoo it on, get it moving, so that we think about things that are holy and noble, or at least good and beautiful. So what we do know is actually very little. Also regarding, there seems to have been some allegation that some individuals made about him. I mean, this is implied by the article in Pillar that set off this investigation. If it's not the case that there weren't such an allegation, I don't see why they would be paying any investigative service to dig up dirt on someone who is simply currently, an official in a position. But if there was such an allegation and there was reason to suspect that there's the danger of the office being abused, or that him not leading, the office that was responsible for exactly dealing with cases of sexual abuse among the clergy, which he did have those responsibilities. So it's very important that someone like him have the proper background check. Now, it looks like those background checks were inadequate because they should have found this. And in fact, many background checks simply look at whether or not there's any police record of any sort. And that is probably not enough for due diligence for someone with that kind of authority.
Wow. Yeah. Due diligence in our own practices, as you just said, Father, are even keeping guard over our imagination. That's very important, because what starts there can then lead to actions. And even what we think about in our imagination then takes us to places where, what you said, guard over your eyes. What you look at, what you think of, what takes place there can be a near occasion of sin or sin itself, depending on what we're talking about. But that is so true. It made me think, Father, of how long, probably a lot of my adult life, I've repeatedly said, and I heard is a member of Congress say this many years ago, but it's a really good thing to remind people to always do the right thing, even when nobody's looking. And I thought about that in relation to this and in what you're saying, Father. And then I kind of have to smile and think, however, these days it seems like someone's always watching. So, someone's always looking. I mean, can we ever feel like nobody's looking, nobody's listening? If we have our, we were talking earlier, if we have our smartphone lying on the desk next to us, it's like someone seems to be always listening. But, or in the camera on there, you never know. I've seen a lot of people like in airports and whatnot with the black electrical tape over the little camera at the top. I mean, that's just where, how we live today. But, always do the right thing, even when no one's looking, even when no one's watching. And that's just kind of one thing I've always kind of said out loud. And I think it's time for the reminder of that. Father Robert Gall is here on the ethics of using app data, the app devices on your devices, to expose other people. 888-914-9149.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
All the news and issues that are happening now.
One place.
The Drew Mariotti Show on Relevant Radio.
Now.
Welcome back. I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew. He'll be back at the end of the week, taking a few days off. I'm talking with Father Robert Gall. Father Gall is an associate professor of ethics at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. Perfect to talk with on the, and he also teaches on communications, church communications, and those of us who communicate in the, just out in the world in general. That's all a moral act, and they teach it so well, communications in the church at Santa Croce, Pontifical Santa Croce, the Holy Cross in Rome, where Father is associate professor of ethics. We're talking about the ethics of using app data to expose people. In the one case, there's a member of the clergy, kind of high profile story out about app usage, which with a particular app. But Father, you've covered this so well. People need to hear your calm, clarity, and charity on this. And Charles is calling from New Mexico. I think following up on what he heard earlier, a couple things we said, or maybe the earlier caller said. So we'll take him real quick. Charles in New Mexico. Charles, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
This is the question. Should something be done to make sure that the priests do not bring their phone into the confessional? That's a question that was asked earlier, and it wasn't answered.
Oh, maybe I jumped in and, like, you know, talked to Father, and somehow the question came out differently. But since that's been asked directly, Father, and we can answer Charles.
Yeah, thank you, Charles. It's a really good question, and you're right. I did dodge it a little bit in my answer, because it seems to me that we have good reason to believe that at least with some cell phones, when they've been one has carefully disabled certain functions, that it doesn't seem to be a danger for any kind of surveillance. And certainly if someone were to be doing any such surveillance, it seems that it would be illegal. Mm-hmm. It would be illegal both canonically and civilly. So, we must be really careful about this. So I would certainly recommend penitence if you feel more comfortable, if you're not sure about the things that you have turned on your phone, to definitely don't bring them into the confessional. And for priests, too, we should be really careful to make sure that we have turned off anything that would be listening in through our microphone.
Or leaving it out altogether, out of the confessional. Since you and I were talking about the different ways when we turn off our phones, it's somehow still enabled in ways we, some of us, just don't understand. But technology is what it is today, and things can still happen even when we think it's turned off. So, Father, how far can this go? These data are publicly available, and in many cases, unfortunately, but they are. So does that mean that ordinary, like, say, parishioners can check up on their priests? I know this sounds crazy, right? But some of the things I've seen after Father Martin put his post on Facebook, and there's a long thread of conversations and debates going on under that about this one, the revelations about Monsignor, a Monsignor in a high place who's now resigned, his app Grindr, and his accessing that app. Since that came out, there's been, even Father Martin said, well, why stop there? I mean, why not teachers in Catholic schools or other parishioners? And so thinking about that, since data are publicly available, so what about ordinary parishioners checking up on their priests? I mean, I know that sounds far-fetched, but not anymore. Or on their own fellow parishioners. Because when you get to that idea, or even that thought, checking up on your fellow parishioners through the data, it kind of harkens back to like East Germany back in the day, and some places in the world today where government asks their citizens to kind of, you know, watch each other and, you know, reveal things that are happening to the police or members of the government.
Right, exactly. There's a movie about that in East Germany called The Lives of Others that shows how if you're constantly spying on people around you, it causes your own moral degradation. Because you're actually misusing yourself, just trying to, you know, sneak up and spy on people. It's damaging to yourself. So if you have that kind of suspicion of your pastor, you know, what should one do morally? Well, you should bring, I mean, if you have some clear evidence, then you should bring that to the authorities. And generally, then one should have confidence in them and pray for the individual involved. Yeah, if you've seen something like really directly and the authorities don't intervene, then you should clearly intervene more forcefully. But I think this is a great opportunity for especially bishops in a fatherly way to, through spiritual conferences and other means of formation with their own priests, to give them advice and to help them, and to help them especially to live holy purity. This isn't the thing about creating a police state, but about making sure that no priest and, of course, no bishop has any of these apps on their phone that are just really dangerous. And then that their other use of social media is restrained and careful and done in a moral way. And Father Martin is right that this does imply issues regarding the laity, especially teachers in Catholic schools who in most dioceses, and this is rightly so, have signed a contract of employment whereby their public life, which includes their posting on Facebook, for instance, is going to reflect the Catholic faith and not in any way draw scandal or confusion among their students because of their behavior. But in this case, speaking of public behavior, which is very different from anything that data might be revealed surreptitiously through an app.
Yeah, sort of stepping over into the world of cybersecurity and cyber and breaches of people's private, you know, emails and just the use of their phones. Again, to harken back to the Pegasus revelations from the Washington Post, now it's all over the media. Real quick, Father, just to recap, security researchers found evidence of attempted or successful installation of Pegasus. It's a software made by an Israeli cybersecurity company. And they found that on 37 phones of activists, human rights activists, journalists, and business people. And they appear to be targets of potentially intense secret surveillance by software that was intended, it said, to pursue criminals and terrorists. But they were on these activist organizations' list of more than 50,000 phone numbers for politicians, judges, lawyers, teachers, and others, journalists. And it's unbelievable. And the things that go on now, then it comes out in public that ties the evidence, or not evidence, but the allegations that tie high-profile people to certain activities that were called or gleaned from this kind of surveillance. And that's underhanded and underground, and it's widening now. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it seems to be getting ever worse.
Well, there are calls, of course, on governments to intervene in order to stop and prohibit all commercial activity, every kind of sale of such spy software that really can only be used in a way that is a crime. And certainly, therefore, the sale of such products should be prohibited. It is true, nonetheless, that state actors like the National Security Agency, the CIA, may continue to use such products. There's really no way to restrain them except through funding through Congress. But according to the U.S. Constitution, it ought to be done only outside the U.S. and focused on non-U.S. citizens for reasons of national security.
Well, this is, it's available. So many people, I mean, I tend to think of like millennials or Gen Zers, but who have the ability to just, they're gifted with abilities, you know, digitally. So once these things are out there and it becomes known, then they, you know, a lot of people take their hand at that too. So Father, just the general people listening right now, both of us included, we have accounts. Most people seem to have accounts on Facebook, on Twitter. And I know there are those, you as well, Father, you probably do, Father Gall, who won't even go on there. And I can understand that. I can. Some days for a long time now, I haven't even signed in. I just haven't had time and nor inclination. But what I use it for is to try to generate awareness on really good stories that aren't getting much attention in the news that I really want people to know about. And I try to find things that are edifying, things that people are doing that's really good, and other people need to know about. And that becomes a witness. And not really use it for anything else. However, stories like this that break, suddenly there's a big debate going on, and that's good to debate as long as we keep it charitable. But that you never have to have an unuttered thought, Father. Let's just close with that. Your advice to all of our listeners about use of social media.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, you mentioned, you know, loading these apps on your devices. Why don't you be careful of the distinction between your computer and your cell phone. And some of these, like Facebook in particular, it will track your movements through your cell phone. And that can be definitely much more invasive than if you have it on your computer, that may be, you know, on a desktop. But certainly what all of this indicates for all of us is that we are always in the presence of God, and that we should always be striving to have that purity of heart so that we might see Him, and that we can reflect that seeing God in any message, in anything that we communicate through social media, including that which we consume.
Oh, that's so beautifully put. We should always remember that we are always in the presence of God. Again, see, always do the right thing even when no one's looking, but God is always there. And God is always looking and listening. He sees it all, knows your heart.